Yes.
Another long silence.
I've never had a friend.
Another long gap.
I'm scared, Croker. And alone.
No, we'll all be with you.
Not for the same reasons.
She fell silent for good then. I held her a long time. The fire burned down and its light faded from the room. Outside, the wind began to howl. When I finally thought she had fallen asleep and started to disengage myself, she clung more tightly, so I stilled and continued to hold her, though half the muscles in my body ached. Eventually, she peeled herself away, rose, built up the fire. I sat. She stood behind me a while, staring at the flames. Then she rested a hand on my shoulder a moment. In a faraway voice, she said,
"Good night."
She went into another room. I sat for 10 or 15 minutes before putting on a last log and shuffling back into the real world. I must have worn an odd look. Neither Goblin nor One Eye aggravated me. I rolled into my bedroll, back to them, but did not fall asleep for a long time. Chapter 55 Opening Rounds. I wakened, startled. The Null. I had been out of it so much it disturbed me by its presence. I rolled out hurriedly, discovered I was alone in the room. Not only there, but in the barracks, practically. There were a few guards in the mess hall. The sun was not yet up. The wind still howled around the building. There was a marked chill in the air, though the fires were burning high. I shoveled boiled oats in and wondered what I was missing. The lady entered as I finished.
"There you are. I thought I'd have to leave without you."
Whatever her problems the night before, she was brisk and confident and ready for business now. The Null faded while I got my coat. I dropped by my own room momentarily. The limper was still there. I left, frowning thoughtfully. Into the carpet. Full crew today. Every carpet was fully crewed and armed. But I was more interested in the absence of snow between town and the Barrowland. That howling wind had blown it away. We went up as it became light enough to see. The lady took the carpet up till the Barrowland resembled a map taking shape as shadows vaporized. She set us to cruising in a tight circle. The wind, I noted, had faded. The great barrow looked ready to collapse into the river.
100 hours, she said, as though divining my thoughts.
So we were reduced to counting hours. I looked around the horizon. There. The comet.
They can't see it from the ground, but tonight it'll have to cloud up.
Below, tiny figures scurried around one quarter of the cleared area. The lady unrolled a map similar to Bowman's. Raven, I said.
Today, if we're lucky.
What are they doing down there?
Surveying.
More than that was happening. The guards were out in full battle regalia, forming an arc around the Barrowland. Light siege machines were being assembled, but some men were indeed surveying and setting up rows of lances flying colored pennons. I did not ask why. She would not explain. A dozen wind whales hovered to the east, beyond the river. I had thought them long departed. The sky there burned with dawn's conflagration.
"First test," the lady said. "A feeble monster."
She frowned in concentration. Our carpet began to glow. A white horse and white rider came from the town. Darling, accompanied by Silent and the lieutenant. Darling rode into an aisle marked by pennons. She halted beside the last. The earth erupted. Something that might have been first cousin to Toad Killer Dog, and even more closely related to an octopus, burst into the light. It raced over the Barrowland, toward the river, away from the Null. Darling galloped toward town. Wizard's fury rained from the carpets. The monster was a cinder in seconds. One, the lady said. Below, men began another aisle of pennons. And so it went, slowly and deliberately, all the day long. Most of the Dominator's creatures broke for the river. The few that charged the other way encountered a barricade of missile fire before succumbing to the Taken. "Is there time to eliminate them all?" I asked as the sun was setting. I had been itchy for hours, sitting in one place.
"More than enough, but it won't stay this easy."
I probed, but she would not expand upon what she had said. It looked slick to me. Just pick them off, and keep picking them off, and go for the big guy when they were all gone. Tough he might be, but what could he do enveloped in the null? When I staggered into the barracks, to my room, I found the limper still at work. The Taken need less rest than we mortals, but he had to be on the edge of collapse. What the hell was he doing? Then there was Bowman's. He had not appeared today. What was he trying to slip up his sleeve? I was eating a supper very much like breakfast when Silent materialized. He settled opposite me, clutching a bowl of mush as if it were an alms bowl. He looked pale. "How was it for Darling?" I asked. He signed. "She almost enjoyed it. She took chances she should not have. One of those things almost got to her. Otto was hurt, fending it off." "He need me." One Eye managed. "What are you doing here?" "It is the night to bring Raven out." Oh. Again I had forgotten Raven. How could I number myself among his friends when I seemed so indifferent to his fate? Silent followed me to where I was staying with One Eye and Goblin. Those two joined us shortly. They were subdued. They had been assigned major roles in the recovery of our old friend. I worried more about Silent. The shadow had passed over him. He was fighting it. Would he be strong enough to win? Part of him did not want Raven rescued. Part of me did not, either. A very tired lady came to ask, "Will you participate in this?" I shook my head. "I'd just get in the way. Let me know when it's done." She gave me a hard look, then shrugged and went away. Very late, a feeble One Eye wakened me. I bolted up. "Well?" "We managed. I don't know how well, but he's back."
"How was it?"
"Rough." He crawled into his bedroll. Goblin was in his already, snoring. Silent had come with them. He was against the wall, wrapped in a borrowed blanket, cutting logs. By the time I wakened fully, One Eye was sawing with the rest. In Raven's room there was nothing to see but Raven snoring and Case looking worried. The crowd had cleared out, leaving a ripe stench behind. "He seem all right?" I asked. Case shrugged. "I'm no doctor." "I am. Let me look him over." Pulse strong enough. Breathing a little fast for a sleeper, but not disturbingly so. Pupils dilated. Muscles tense. Sweaty. "Don't look like much to worry about. Keep feeding him broth, and get a hold of me as soon as he's talking. Don't let him get up. His muscles will be clay. He might hurt himself." Case nodded and nodded. I returned to my bedroll, lay there a long time alternately wondering about Raven and about the limper. A lamp still burned in my former quarters. The last of the old Taken still pursued his monomaniacal quest. Raven became the greater worry. He was going to demand an accounting of our care for Darling, and I was in a mood to challenge his right. Chapter 56. Time Fading. Dawn comes early when you wish it would not. The hours flash when you want them to drag. The following day was another of executions. The only thing unusual was that the limper came out to watch. He seemed satisfied we were doing things right. He returned to my quarters, where he sacked out in my bed. My evening check on Raven showed little change. Case reported that he had come near wakening several times and was mumbling in his sleep. "Keep pouring soup down him, and don't be afraid to yell if you need me." I could not sleep. I tried roaming the barracks, but near silence reigned. A few sleepless guards haunted the mess hall. They fell silent at my arrival. I thought about going over to Blue Willie, but I would find no better reception there. I was on everybody's list. It could do nothing but get worse. I knew what the lady meant about lonely. I wished I had the nerve to visit her now that I needed a hug. I returned to my bedroll. I did fall asleep this time. They had to threaten mayhem to get me up. We polished off the last of the Dominator's pets before noon. The lady ordered a holiday for the remainder of the day. Come next morning, we were to rehearse for the big show. She guessed we had about 48 hours before the river opened the tomb. Time to rest, time to practice, and ample time to get in the first whack. That afternoon, Limper went out and flew around a while. He was in high spirits. I seized the opportunity to visit my quarters and poke around, but all I could find were a few black wood shavings and a hint of silver dust, and barely enough of either to leave traces. He had cleaned up hastily. I did not touch. No telling what curiosities might occur if I did. Otherwise, I learned nothing. The practice for the event was tense. Everyone turned out, including Limper and Bowmans, who had kept so low most everyone had forgotten him. The wind whales ranged above the river. Their mantas soared and swooped. Darling charged the great barrow down a prepared aisle, stopping just short of far enough. The Taken and guards stood to their respective weapons. It looked good. Looked like it would work. So why was I convinced we were in for big trouble? The moment our carpet touched down, Case was beside it. "I need your help," he told me, ignoring the lady. "He won't listen to me. He keeps trying to get up. He fell on his face already twice." I glanced at the lady. She gave me a go-ahead nod. Raven was seated on the edge of his bed when I arrived. "I hear you're being a pain in the ass. What's the point of pulling your butt out of the Barrowland if you're going to commit suicide?" His gaze rose slowly. He did not appear to recognize me. "Oh, damn," I thought. "His mind is gone." "He talked any, Case?" "Some. He don't always make sense. He don't realize how long it's been, I think." "Maybe we should restrain him." "No." Startled, we looked at Raven. He knew me now. "No restraints, Croker. I'll behave." He flopped onto his back, smiling. "How long, Case?" "Tell him the story," I said. "I'm going to whip up some medicine." I just wanted away from Raven. He looked worse with his soul restored. Cadaverous. Too much a reminder of my mortality, and that was one thing I did not need on my mind more than it was. I whipped up a couple potions. One would settle Raven's shakes, the other would knock him out if he gave Case too much trouble. Raven gave me a dark look when I returned. I do not know how far Case had gotten. "Stay off your high horse," I told him. "You got no idea what's happened since Juniper. In fact, not a whole lot since the battle at Charm. You being the brave and rugged loner hasn't helped. Drink this. It's for the shakes." I gave Case the other mixture with whispered instructions. In a voice little above a whisper, Raven asked, "Is it true? Darling and the lady are going after the Dominator tomorrow. Together?" "Yes. Do or die time for everybody."
"I want to—"
"You'll stay put. You too, Case. We don't want Darling distracted." I had managed to abolish worries about the tangled ramifications inherent in tomorrow's confrontations. Now they rushed in on me again. The Dominator would not be the end of it, unless we lost. If he fell, the war with the lady would resume instantly. I wanted to see Darling badly, wanted in on her plans. I dared not go. The lady was keeping me on the leash. She might interrogate me any time. Lonely work. Lonely work. Case went on tale-telling. Then Goblin and One-Eye dropped in to tell stories from their perspectives. The lady even looked in. She beckoned me. "Yes?" I asked. "Come." I followed her to her quarters. Outside, night had fallen. In about 18 hours, the Great Barrow would open of its own accord. Sooner, if we followed plan. "Sit." I sat. I said, "I'm getting fixated on it. Butterflies the size of horses. Can't think about anything else."
"I know. I considered you as a distraction, but I cared too much."
Well, that distracted me.
"Perhaps one of your potions?"
I shook my head. "There is no specific for fear in my arsenal. I've heard of wizards.
Those antidotes cost too dearly. We'll need our wits about us. It won't go like it did in rehearsal."
I raised an eyebrow. She did not expand. I suppose she expected a lot of improvisational behavior from her allies. The mess sergeant appeared. His crew rolled in a grand meal they set out on a table brought in special. A last feast for the condemned. After the crowd dispersed, the lady said,
"I ordered the best for everyone, your friends in town included. Breakfast, likewise."
She seemed calm enough, but she was more accustomed to high-risk confrontations. I snorted at myself. I recalled being asked for a hug. She was as scared as anybody. She saw, but did not ask. Tip enough that she was focused inward. The meal was a miracle, considering what the cooks had to work with. But it was nothing grand. We exchanged no words during its course. I finished first, rested my elbows on the table, retreated into thought. She followed suit. She had eaten very little. After a few minutes, she went to her bedroom. She returned with 3 black arrows. Each had silver inlays in Tel Curry script. I had seen their like before. Soulcatcher gave Raven one the time we ambushed Limper and Whisper. She said, "Use the bow I gave you, and stay close." The arrows appeared identical.
"Who?"
"My husband. They can't kill him. They lack his true name. But they'll slow him down."
"You don't think the rest of the plan will work?"
"Anything is possible, but all eventualities should be considered."
Her eyes met mine. There was something there. We looked away. She said,
"You'd better go. Sleep well. I want you alert tomorrow."
I laughed. "How?"
"It's been arranged, for all but the duty section."
Oh, sorcery. One of the Taken would put everyone to sleep. I rose. I dithered for a few seconds, putting logs on the fire. I thanked her for the meal. Finally, I managed to say what was on my mind. "I want to wish you luck, but I can't put my whole heart into it." Her smile was wan.
"I know."
She followed me to the door. Before I went out, I yielded to the final impulse, turned, found her right there, hoping. I hugged her for half a minute. Damn her for being human. But I needed that, too. Chapter 57 The Last Day. We were permitted to sleep in, then given an hour to breakfast, make peace with our gods, or whatever we had to do, before entering battle. The Great Barrow was supposed to hold till noon. There was no rush. I wondered what the thing in the earth was doing. Battle muster came about 8. There were no absences. The Limper drifted around on his little carpet, his path seeming to intersect that of Whisper more often than was necessary. They had their heads together about something. Bowman skulked around the edges of things, trying to remain invisible. I did not blame him. In his shoes, I might have made a run for ore. In his shoes? were mine more comfortable. The man was a victim of his sense of honor. He believed he had a debt to repay. A drumbeat announced time to take positions. I followed the lady, noting that the remaining civilians were headed down the road to Orr with what possessions they could carry. It was going to be a crazy road. The troops the lady had summoned were reported our side of Orr, coming in their thousands. They would arrive too late. Nobody thought to tell them to hold up. Attentions had narrowed. The outside world no longer existed. I watched the civilians and for a moment wondered what difficulties faced us if we had to flee. But my concern did not persist. I could not worry past the Dominator. Wind whales took station over the river. Mantas searched for updrafts. Taken carpets rose. But today my feet remained on the ground. The lady intended meeting her husband toe to toe. Thanks a bunch, friend. There was Croker in her shadow with his puny bow and arrows. Guards all in position, entrenched behind low palisades, ditches, and artillery. Pennons all in place to guide Darling's carefully surveyed ride. Tension mounting. What more was there to do? "Stay behind me," the lady reminded. "Keep your arrows ready." "Yeah, good luck. If we win, I'll buy you dinner at the gardens in Opal." I don't know what possessed me to say that. Frenzied attempt at self-distraction. It was a chilly morning, but I was sweating. She seemed startled. Then she smiled. "If we win, I'll hold you to that." The smile was feeble. She had no cause to believe she would survive another hour. She started walking toward the great barrow. Faithful pup, I dogged her. The last spark of light would not die. She would not save herself through surrender. Bowman's gave us a head start, then followed. Likewise, the limper. Neither's action was in the master plan. The lady did not react. Perforce, I let it go, too. Taken carpets began to spiral down. The wind whales seemed a little bouncy, the mantas a little frenetic in their search for favorable air. Edge of the barrowland. My amulet did not tingle. All the old fetishes outside the barrowland's heart had been removed. The dead now lay in peace. Moist earth sucked at my boots. I had trouble maintaining my balance, keeping an arrow across my bow. I had one black shaft set to string, the other two gripped in the hand that held the bow. The lady halted a few feet from the pit whence we had dragged Bowman's. She became oblivious to the world, almost as if she were communing with the thing underground. I glanced back. Bowman's had halted a little to the north, about 50 feet from me. He had his hands in his pockets and wore a look that dared me to protest his presence. The limper had set down about where the moat was when a moat surrounded the barrowland. He did not want to fall when the null swept over him. I glanced at the sun. About 9. 3 hours margin, if we wanted to use it. My heart was setting records for carrying on. My hands shook so much it seemed the bones ought to rattle. I doubted I could put an arrow into an elephant from 5 feet. How come I got lucky and got picked to be her butt boy? I reviewed my life. What had I done to deserve this? So many choices I might have made differently. "What? Ready?" she asked. "Never," I pasted on a sickly grin. She tried to smile back, but she was more scared than I was. She knew what she faced. She believed she had only moments to live. She had guts, that woman, going on when there was nothing she could win but, perhaps, some small redemption in the eyes of the world. Names flashed through my mind. Sileth. Credence. Witch. In a moment, a choice might be critical. I am not a religious man, but I sped a silent prayer to the gods of my youth, asking that it not be me required to complete the ritual of her naming. She faced the town and raised an arm. Trumpets winded,
as though anyone were not paying attention. Her arm dropped. Hoofbeats. Darling in her white, with Elmo, Silent, and the lieutenant, all three dogging her, galloped the lane defined by the pennons. The null was to come sudden, then freeze. The dominator was to be allowed to break out, but not with his power intact. I felt the null. It hit me hard, so unaccustomed to it was I. The lady staggered too. A mule of fear fled her lips. She did not want to be disarmed. Not now. But it was the only way. The ground shuddered once, gently, then geysered upward. I retreated a step. Shivering, I watched the fountain of muck disperse, and was amazed to see not a man, but the dragon. The damned dragon. I hadn't thought about that. It reared 50 feet high, flames boiling around its head. It roared. What now? In the null, the lady could not shield us. The dominator fled my mind entirely. I drew a shaft to its head, aimed for the beast's open mouth. A shout restrained me. I turned. Bowmans pranced and shrieked, calling insults in Telcurry. The dragon eyeballed him, and recalled that they had unfinished business. It struck like a snake. Flames surged ahead of it. Fire masked Bowmans, but did not harm him. He had taken his stand beyond the null. The lady moved a few steps to her right, to look past the dragon, whose forelegs were now free and scrabbling to drag the rest of its immense body loose. I could see nothing of our quarry, but the flying taken were into their attack runs. Heavy, fire-carrying spears were in flight already. They roared down, burst. A thunderous voice announced, "Headed for the river!" The lady hurried forward. Darling resumed moving, carrying the null toward the water. Ghosts cursed and pranced around me. I was too distracted to respond. Mantas dropped in swift, dark pairs, dancing between bolts of lightning loosed by wind whales. The air went crackly, smelled dry and strange. Suddenly, Tracker was with us, muttering about having to save the tree. I heard a rising bray of horns. I dodged a flailing dragon leg, ducked a hammering wing, looked back. Scores of ill-clad human skeletons poured from the forest in the wake of a limping toad-killer dog. I knew we hadn't seen the last of that bastard. I tried to get the lady's attention. The forest tribes, they're attacking the guard. The dominator had had at least one ace in the hole. The lady paid me no heed. What the tribesmen and guard did were of no consequence to us at the moment. We had prey on the run, and dared concern ourselves with nothing else. "In the water!" that voice thundered from above. Darling moved some more. The lady and I scrambled over earth, still rippling with the dragon's efforts to break free. It ignored us. Bowman's had its entire attention. A wind whale dropped. Its tentacles probed the river. It caught something, dropped ballast water. A human figure writhed in the whale's grasp, screaming. My spirits rose. We had done it. The whale lifted too high. For a moment it raised the dominator out of the null. Deadly mistake. Thunder. Lightning. Terror on hot hooves. Half the town and a swath to the edge of the null shattered, scattered, burned, and blackened. The whale exploded. The dominator fell. As he plunged toward both water and null, he bellowed, "Sylith! I name your name!" I loosed an arrow. Deadeye, one of the best wing shots I have ever made. I got him in the side. He shrieked and clawed at the shaft. Then he hit water. Manta lightning made the river boil. Another whale dropped and shoved tentacles beneath the surface. For a long moment I was terrified the dominator would stay under and escape. But up he came, again in a monster's grasp. This whale, too, went too high, and paid the price.
though the Dominator's magic was much enfeebled, probably by my arrow. He got off one wild spell, which went astray and started fires in the guards' compound. The guards and tribesmen were closely engaged nearby. The spell slew scores from both forces. I did not get another arrow off. I was frozen. I had been assured that the naming of a name, once suitable rituals had been observed, could not be stilled by the null. But the lady had not faltered. She stood a step short of the edge of land, staring at the thing that had been her husband. The naming of the name Sileth had not disturbed her at all. Not Sileth. Twice the Dominator had named her wrong. Only one left to try. But my grin was hollow. I would have named her Sileth. A third wind whale caught the Dominator. This one made no mistake. It carried him to shore, toward Darling and her escort. He struggled furiously. Gods, the vitality of that man. Behind us, men screamed. Arms clashed. The guards had not been as surprised as I. They were holding their ground. The airborne Taken hastened to support them, flinging a storm of deadly sorceries. Toad-killer Dog was the center of their attention. Elmo, the lieutenant, and Silent jumped the Dominator the moment the wind whale dropped him. That was like jumping a tiger. He threw Elmo 30 feet. I heard the crack as he broke the lieutenant's spine. Silent danced away. I put another arrow into him. He staggered, but did not go down. Dazed, he started toward the lady and me. Tracker met him halfway. He set the son of the tree aside, grabbed hold of his man, started a wrestling match of epic scale. He and the Dominator shrieked like souls in torment. I wanted to rush down and tend to Elmo and the lieutenant, but the lady gestured for me to stay. Her gaze roved everywhere. She expected something more. A great shriek shook the earth. A ball of oily fire rolled skyward. The dragon flopped like an injured worm, screaming. Bowman's had disappeared. To be seen was the limper. Somehow he had dragged himself to within a dozen feet of me without my noticing. My fear was so great I nearly voided my bowels. His mask was gone. The devastated wasteland of his bare face glowered with malice. In a moment, he was thinking, he would even all scores with me. My legs turned to jelly. He pointed a small crossbow, grinned. Then his aim drifted aside. I saw that his quarrel was close cousin to the arrow across my bow. That electrified me, finally. I drew to the head. He squealed.
"Credence, the rite is complete. I name your name."
And then he let fly. I loosed at the same instant. I could get the shaft off no faster, damn me. My arrow slammed into his black heart, knocked him over. But too late. Too late. The lady cried out. Terror turned into unreasoning rage. I flung myself at the limper, abandoning my bow for my sword. He did not turn to face my assault. He just held himself up on one elbow and gaped at the lady. I really went crazy. I guess we all can, in the right circumstances. But I had been a soldier for ages. I'd long ago learned you don't do that sort of thing and stay alive long. The limper was inside the null, which meant he was barely clinging to life, barely able to sustain himself, wholly unable to defend himself. I made him pay for all the years of fear. My first stroke half-severed his neck. I kept hacking till I finished the job. Then I scattered a few limbs about, blunting my steel and madness on ancient bone. Sanity began to return. I whirled to see what had become of the lady. She was down on one knee, the weight of her body resting upon the other. She was trying to draw Limper's bolt. I charged over, pulled her hand away. No, let me. Later. This time I was less startled that the naming had not worked. This time convinced me that nothing could disarm her. She should have been gone, damn it. I gave myself up to a long fit of the shakes. The Taken pounding on the forest people were having an effect. Some of the savages had begun fleeing. Toadkiller Dog was enveloped by painful sorceries. "Hang on," I told the lady. "We're over the hump. We're going to do it." I don't know that I believed that, but it was what she needed to hear. Tracker and the Dominator continued to roll around, grunting and cursing. Silent pranced around them with a broad-bladed spear. When chance presented itself, he cut our great enemy. Nothing could survive that forever. Darling watched, stayed close, stayed out of the Dominator's way. I scooted back to the wreck of the Limper and dug out the shaft I'd put into his chest. He glared at me. There was life in his brain still. I booted his head into the trench left by the dragon's rising. That beast had ceased thrashing. Still no sign of Bowman's. Never any sign of Bowman's. He found the fate he feared, second try. He slew the monster from within. Do not think Bowman's peripheral because he kept his head down. I believe the Dominator expected the dragon to preoccupy Darling and the lady those few moments he needed to get shut of the null. Bowman's took that away, with the same determination and distinction as the lady facing her inescapable fate. I returned to the lady. My hands had attained their battlefield steadiness. I wished for my kit. My knife would have to do. I laid her back, started digging. That quarrel would chew on her till I got it out. For all the pain, she managed a grateful smile. A dozen men surrounded Tracker and the Dominator now, everyone stabbing. Some did not seem particular as to whom they hit. The sands were about gone for the old evil. I packed and bound the lady's wound with material from her own clothing. We'll change this as soon as we can. The tribesmen were whipped. Toadkiller Dog was dragging himself toward the high country. That old mutt had as much staying power as his boss. Guards, freed of the fighting, hurried our way. They carried wood for the old Doom's funeral pyre. Chapter 58. End of the Game. Then I spotted Raven. The damned fool. He was leaning on Case, hobbling. He carried a bare sword. His face was set. Trouble, for sure. His step was not quite as feeble as he pretended. It took no genius to guess what he had in mind. In his simple way of seeing things, he was going to make everything right with Darling by finishing off her big enemy. The shakes came back, but this time not from fear. If somebody did not do something, I was going to be right in the middle, right where I would have to make a choice, to act, and nothing I did would make anyone happy. I tried distracting myself by testing the lady's dressing. Shadows fell upon us. I looked up into Silent's cold eyes, into Darling's more compassionate face. Silent cast a subtle glance Raven's way. He was in the middle, too. The lady clawed at my arm. "Lift me," she said. I did. She was as weak as water. I had to support her. "Not yet," she told Darling, as though Darling could hear. "He is not yet finished." They had gotten a leg and an arm off the Dominator. Those they threw into the woodpile. Tracker hung on so they could carve on the Dominator's neck. Goblin and One Eye stood by, waiting for the head, ready to run like hell. Some guards planted the Son of the Tree. Wind whales and mantas hovered overhead. Others, with the Taken, were harassing Toadkiller Dog and the savages through the forest. Raven was getting closer, and I was no closer to knowing where I stood. That son-of-a-bitching Dominator was tough. He killed a dozen men before they finished carving him up. Even then he was not dead. Like Limpers, his head lived on. time for Goblin and One-Eye. Goblin grabbed the still-living head, sat down, held it tightly between his knees. One-Eye hammered a 6-inch silver spike through its forehead into its brain. The Dominator's lips kept forming curses. The nail would capture his blighted soul. The head would go into the fire. When that burned out, the spike would be recovered and driven into the trunk of the Son of the Tree, meaning one dark spirit would be bound for 1,000,000 years. Guards brought limper parts to the fire, too. They did not find his head, though. The sodden walls of the trench whence the dragon had risen had collapsed upon it. Goblin and One-Eye torched the woodpile. The fire leapt up as if eager to fulfill its mission. The limper's bolt had struck the lady 4 inches from the heart, midway between her left breast and collarbone. I confess to a certain pride in having drawn it under such terrible circumstances without killing her. I should have incapacitated her left arm, though. She now lifted that arm, reached out to Darling. Silent and I were puzzled, but only for a moment. The lady pulled Darling to her. She had no strength, so it must be that, in a way, Darling allowed herself to be pulled. Then she whispered, "The rite is complete. I name your true name, Tony Fisk." Darling screamed soundlessly. The null began to fray. Silent's face blackened. For what seemed an eternity, he stood there in obvious torment, torn between a vow, a love, a hatred, perhaps the concept of an obligation to a higher duty. Tears began coursing down his cheeks. I got an old wish and was ready to cry myself when I did. He spoke.
"The ritual is closed."
He had trouble shaping his words.
"I name your true name, Dorothea Sanjak. I name your true name, Dorothea Sanjak."
I thought he would collapse in a faint then, but he did not. The women did. Raven was getting closer, so I had a pain atop all the other pains. Silent and I stared at one another. I suspect my face was as tormented as his. Then he nodded through his tears. There was peace between us. We knelt, untangled the women. He looked worried while I felt Darling's neck. "She'll be all right," I told him. "The lady, too, but he did not care about that." I wonder still how much each of the women expected in that moment, how much each yielded to destiny. It marked their end as powers of the world. Darling had no null. The lady had no magic. They had cancelled one another out. I heard screaming. Carpets were raining. All those taken had been taken by the lady herself, and after what had happened on the plain, she had made certain her fate would be their fate. So now they were undone and soon dead. Not much magic left on that field. Tracker, too, was a goner, mauled to death by the Dominator. I believe he died happy. But there was no end yet. No, there was Raven. 50 feet away, he let go of Case and bore down like Nemesis itself. His gaze was fixed on the lady, though you could tell by his very step that he was on stage, that he was going to do a deed to win back Darling. "Well, Croker, can you let it happen?" The lady's hand shivered in mine. Her pulse was feeble, but it was there. Maybe he would bluff. I picked up my bow and the arrow recovered from Limper. "Stop, Raven." He did not. I do not think he heard me. Oh, damn. If he didn't, it was going to get out of hand. "Raven!" I bent the bow. He stopped. He stared at me as if trying to recall who I was. That whole battleground fell into silence, every eye fixed upon us. Silent stopped moving Darling away, took up a sword,
made certain he was between her and potential danger. It was almost amusing, the two of us there, like twins, standing guard over women whose hearts we could never have. One Eye and Goblin began drifting our way. I had no idea where they stood. Wherever, I did not want them involved. This had to be made into Raven against Croaker. Damn, damn, damn. Why couldn't he just go away? "It's over, Raven. There ain't going to be no more killing." I think my voice began to rise in pitch. "You hear? It's lost and won." He looked at Silent and Darling, not at me, and took a step. "You want to be the next dead guy?" Damn it, nobody could ever bluff him. Could I do it? I might have to. One Eye stopped a careful 10 feet to one side. "What are you doing, Croaker?" I was shaking, everything but my hands and arms, though my shoulders had begun to ache with the strain of keeping my arrow drawn. "What about Elmo?" I asked, my throat tight with emotion. "What about the lieutenant?" "No good," he replied, telling me what I already knew in my heart. "Gone. Why don't you put the bow down?" "When he drops the sword." Elmo had been my best friend for more years than I cared to count. Tears began to blur my vision. "They're gone. That leaves me in charge, right? Senior officer surviving, right? My first order is, peace breaks out. Right now. She made this possible. She gave herself up for this. Nobody touches her now, not while I'm alive." "Then we'll change that," Raven said. He started moving. "Damned stubborn fool," One Eye shrieked. He flung himself toward Raven. I heard Goblin pattering up behind me. Too late. Both too late. Raven had a lot more fire in him than anyone suspected, and he was more than a little crazy. I yelled, "No!" and let fly. The arrow took Raven in the hip, in the very side he had been pretending was crippled. He wore a look of amazement as he stumbled. Lying there on the ground, his sword 8 feet away, he looked up at me, still unable to believe that, in the end, I was not bluffing. I had trouble believing it myself. Case yelled and tried to jump me. Hardly looking at him, I whacked him upside the head with my bow. He went away and fussed over Raven. Silence and stillness again. Everyone looking at me. I slung my bow. "Fix him up, One Eye." I limped over to the lady, knelt, lifted her. She seemed awfully light and fragile for one who had been so terrible. I followed Silent toward what was left of the town. The barracks were still burning. We made an odd parade, the two of us, lugging women. "Company meeting tonight," I threw out at the company survivors. "You all be there." I would not have believed myself capable before I did it. I carried her all the way to Blue Willie, and my ankle never hurt till I put her down. Chapter 59 Last Vote. I limped into the common room at what was left of Blue Willie, the lady supported under one arm, bow used as a crutch. The ankle was killing me. I had thought it almost healed. I deposited the lady in a chair. She was weak and pale, and only about half conscious, despite the best One Eye and I could do. I was determined not to let her out of my sight. Our situation was still fraught with peril. Her people no longer had any reason to be nice, and she was at risk herself, probably more from herself than from Raven or my comrades. She had fallen into a state of complete despair. "Is this all?" I asked. Silent, Goblin, and One Eye were there, and Otto the Immortal, wounded, as always after a company action, with his eternal sidekick, Hagop. A youngster named Mergen, our standard-bearer, three others from the company,
and Darling, of course, seated beside Silent. She ignored the lady completely. Raven and Case were back by the bar, present without having been invited. Raven wore a dark look, but seemed to have himself under control. His gaze was fixed on Darling. She looked grim. She had rebounded better than the lady, but she had won. She ignored Raven more assiduously than she did the lady. There had been a showdown between them, and I had overheard his half. Darling had made very clear her displeasure with his inability to handle emotional commitment. She had not cut him off. She had not banished him from her heart. But he was not redeemed in her eyes. He then had said some very unkind things about Silent, whom it was obvious she held in affection, but nothing deeper. And that had gotten her really angry. I had peeped then, and she had gone on in great length and fury about not being a prize in some men's game, like a princess in some dopey fairy tale where a gang of suitors ride around doing stupid and dangerous things vying for her hand. Like the lady, she had been in charge too long to accept a standard female role now. She was still the white rose inside. So Raven was not so happy. He had not been shut out, but he had been told he had a long way to go if he wanted to lay any claims. The first task she had given him was righting himself with his children. I halfway felt sorry for the guy. He knew only one role, hard guy, and it had been stripped away. One Eye interrupted my thoughts. "This is it, Croker. This is all. Going to be a big funeral." It would. "Shall I preside as senior officer surviving, or do you want to exercise your prerogative as oldest brother?" "You do it." He was in no mood to do anything but brood. Neither was I, but there were 10 of us still alive, surrounded by potential enemies. We had decisions to make. "All right. This is an official convocation of the Black Company, last of the free companies of Katovar. We've lost our captain. First business is to elect a new commander. Then we have to decide how we're going to get out of here. Any nominations?"
"You," Otto said. "I'm a physician. You're the only real officer left."
Raven started to rise. I told him, "You sit down and keep quiet. You don't even belong here. You walked out on us 15 years ago, remember? Come on, you guys. Who else?" Nobody spoke. Nobody volunteered. Nobody met my eye, either. They all knew I did not want it. Goblin squeaked.
"Is anybody against Croker?"
Nobody blackballed me. It's wonderful to be loved. Grand to be the least of evils. I wanted to turn it down. The option was not there.
"All right. Next order of business. Getting the hell out of here. We're surrounded, guys, and the guard will get its balance pretty soon. We've got to get gone before they start looking around for somebody to whip on. But once we get clear, then what?" Nobody offered an opinion. These men were as much in shock as the guards. "All right, I know what I want to do. Since time immemorial, one of the jobs of the analyst has been to return the annals to Katovar, should the company disband or be demolished. We've been demolished. I propose a vote to disband. Some of us have assumed obligations that are going to put us at odds as soon as we don't have anybody more dangerous to fuss at." I looked at Silent. He met my gaze. He'd just moved his seat so he was more into the gap between Darling and Raven, a gesture understood by everyone but Raven himself. I had nominated myself guardian for the lady, for the time being. There was no way we could keep those 2 women in one another's company for long. I hoped we could hold the group together as far as Orr. I would be satisfied with getting to the edge of the forest. We needed every hand. Our tactical situation could not have been worse. "Shall we disband?" I asked.
That caused a stir. Everyone but Silent argued the negative. I interjected, "This is a formal proposition. I want those with special interests to go their own way, without the stigma of desertion. That don't mean we have to split. What I'm saying is, we formally shed the name of the Black Company. I'll head south with the Annals, looking for Katovar. Anyone who wants can come, under the usual rules." Nobody wanted to give up the name. That would be like renouncing a patronym 30 generations old. So we don't give it up. Who would rather not go look for Katovar? 3 hands rose. All belonged to troopers who had enlisted north of the Sea of Torments. Silent abstained, though he wanted to go his own way, in pursuit of his own impossible dream. Then another hand shot up. Belatedly, Goblin had noted that One Eye was not opposed. They started one of their arguments. I cut it short. I won't insist on the majority dragging everybody along. As commander, I can discharge anyone who wants to follow another path. Silent? He had been a brother of the Black Company longer than I. We were his friends, his family. His heart was torn. Finally, he nodded. He would go his own road, even without promises from Darling. The 3 who had opposed heading for Katovar nodded, too. I entered their discharges in the annals. "You're out," I told them. "I'll deal out your shares of money and equipment when we clear the south edge of the forest. Till then, we stick together." I did not pursue it further, or in a moment I would have been hanging all over Silent, bawling my eyes out. We had been through a lot, he and I. I wheeled on Goblin, pen poised. "Well, do I strike your name?" "Go on," One Eye said. "Hurry. Do it. Get rid of him. We don't need his kind. He's never been anything but trouble." Goblin scowled at him. "Just for that, I'm not leaving. I'm going to stay and outlive you, and make your remaining days examples of misery, and I hope you live another 100 years. I had not thought they would split. "Fine," I said, stifling a grin. "Hagop, take a couple men and round up some animals. The rest of you collect whatever might be useful, like money, if you see any lying around." They looked at me with eyes still dull with the impact of what had happened. "We're getting out, guys, as soon as we can ride, before any more trouble finds us. Hagop, don't stint on pack animals. I want to carry off everything that isn't nailed down." There was talk, argument, whatnot, but I closed the official debate at that point. Cunning devil that I am, I got the guards to do our burying. I stood over the company graves with Silent and shed more than a few tears. I never thought Elmo. He was my best friend. It had hit me, at last, hard. Now I had done all the duties, there was nothing to hold it at bay. He was my sponsor when I came in. Silent lifted a hand, gently squeezed my arm. It was as much of a gesture as I could expect. The guards were paying their last respects to their own. Their days was fading. Soon they would begin thinking about getting on with business, about asking the lady what they should do. In a sense, they had been rendered unemployed. They did not know their mistress had been disarmed. I prayed they did not learn, for I meant to use her as our ticket out. I dreaded what might happen should her loss become general knowledge. On the broad canvas, civil wars to torment the world. On the fine, attempts at revenge upon her person. Someday someone would begin to suspect. I just wanted the secret kept till we had a good run at getting out of the Empire. Silent took my arm again. He wanted to go. "One second," I said. I drew my sword, saluted our graves, repeated the ancient formula of parting. Then I followed him to where the others waited. Silent's party would ride with us a while, as I'd wished. Our ways would part when we felt safe from the guards.
I did not look forward to that moment, inevitable though it was. How keep two such as Darling and the lady in company when there was no survival imperative? I swung into the saddle, cursing my wretched, aching ankle. The lady gave me a dirty look. "Well," I said, "you're showing some spirit."
"Are you kidnapping me?"
"You want to be alone with all your folks, with maybe nothing better than a knife to keep order?" Then I forced a grin. "We've got a date, remember? Dinner at the gardens in Opal." For just a moment there was a spark of mischief behind her despair, and a look from a moment by a fire when we had come close. Then the shadow returned. I leaned closer, trembling with the thought. I whispered, "And I need your help to get the annals out of the tower." I had not told anyone that I did not have them in my possession yet. The shadow went.
"Dinner? That's a promise?"
The witch could promise a lot, just with a look and her tone. I croaked, "In the gardens, yes." I gave the time-honored signal. Hagop started off on point. Goblin and One-Eye followed, bickering as usual. Then Mergen with the standard. Then the lady and I. Then most of the others with the pack animals. Silent and Darling brought up the rear, well separated from the lady and me. As I urged my mount forward, I glanced back. Raven stood leaning on his cane, looking more forlorn and abandoned than he should. Case was still trying to explain it to him. The kid had no trouble understanding. I figured Raven would, once he got over the shock of not having everyone jump to do things his way, the shock of discovering that old Croker could fill his bluff if he had to. "I'm sorry," I murmured his way, not quite sure why. Then I faced the forest and did not look back again. I had a feeling he would be on the road himself soon enough, if Darling really meant as much to him as he wanted us to think. That night, for the first time in who knows how long, the northern skies were completely clear. The great comet illuminated our way. Now the north knew what the rest of the empire had known for weeks. It was on the wane already. The hour of decision had passed. The empire awaited in fear the news that it portended. Away north, 3 days later, in the dark of a moonless night, a beast with three legs limped from the great forest. It settled on its haunches on the remains of the Barrowland, scratched the earth with its one forepaw. The son of the tree flung a tiny change storm. The monster fled. But it would return another night, and another after that.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production. Executive producer, Steve Feldberg. Producer, Mike Charzik. Music by Michael Whalen. Copyright 1985 by Glenn Cook. Audio recording copyright 2010 by Audible Inc. If you enjoyed this audiobook, the rest of Glenn Cook's Black Company series is available today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.